You are listening to a sermon by Dr. J. Evan Kreider, recorded on Sunday, August 14, 2016, at the Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
My friend John once told me that, Evan, I would like to say something to the congregation sometime in the future. We haven't selected a date yet, but he said, it's something I've been thinking about my whole life. This morning, I'm taking a different stance. I'm going to be preaching against what I've been doing my whole life. Part two on giving, my scintillating series, which will have at least four talks, and I'm contemplating five, but I may not be able to give that many, who knows. Please consult today's bulletin, page two, for a summary on my first talk on giving. And there I talked about tithing in the Old Testament. And for those of you listening on internet, I gave that talk on May 9, 2016. And that talk examined what the Old Testament said about tithing. And there you will learn, strangely enough, tithing never concerned money. Tithing never concerned income or fish that Peter caught, or the trees that you harvested, or the minerals that you dug out of the ground, or the houses you sold. Tithing only concerned what the landowners raised on their farms, that to which God gave life, livestock, grains, fruits, and alcohol made from fruits. Today's talk focuses on the Gospels in order to review what Jesus said about tithing and also about giving generally. We have two passages, and you can see the first in your bulletin from Luke 11. This is from a whole series of criticisms that Jesus has of the Pharisees. Jesus tells them that although they tithe very carefully, and he makes it seem ridiculous, even though you tithe your mint leaves, I'm sorry to say I have not been tithing my mint leaves, that this really does not count because you are also neglecting other parts of the law dealing with money, things like justice, and you are part of a government which has created laws which benefit the rich and hurt the poor. Jesus says you must act justly in all situations. In a parallel passage in another gospel, Jesus said, oh, and tithing cumin seeds. I recently baked with cumin seeds, and believe me, you don't want to count cumin seeds. Second passage is from Luke 18. 9 to 14. This is a well-known story, a parable, in which Jesus imagines a Pharisee publicly praying. In his prayer, he ends up praying mostly about himself, and he manages to pray out loud in the temple so that other people can find out about his giving, that he even tithes his income, which was not required by the law. Rather than praying for the tax collector, the Pharisee prayed against the tax collector. Jesus neither praises nor criticizes the Pharisee's tithing, even though it went way beyond what the law required. But he certainly criticizes the spirit in which the tithing was done. And that is the sum total of what Jesus has to say about tithing. So Jesus doesn't change any of the law concerning tithing. Next, we will consider what Jesus had to say about giving. And we will learn that Jesus only ever refers to giving when he says you should give to poor people. And almost all of his examples involve street people. Throughout these examples runs the theme of generosity, and it's been a theme in the songs that Andre has chosen as well. Jesus says we are to be generous to everybody in need, especially one-on-one. So in Mark 12, 40 to 44, which we heard read, we read about men who are very wealthy because these scribes knew how to foreclose on the properties of widows who found themselves suddenly without income. These men, pious Jews, acted within the law, but they did not act ethically. They amassed the property of multiple widows, possibly even forcing some of the widows to become street people or even prostitutes. Even so, those same wealthy men then made a great show of giving alms and offerings, not tithes, to the temple. Large sums of money, it says, into the temple's treasury, likely into a secure box where the money would then be distributed to the poor. This suggests to me that individuals were carrying bags of coins that could be easily evaluated by people visually, and they could see how much money was and how much noise it made when it hit, while others enjoyed looking on and comparing. On the other hand, the impoverished widow, possibly her land having been taken away by one who was giving alms, she did not tithe because she obviously no longer owned fields or vineyards or herds or flocks. She gave all the money she had to live on. Jesus considered her offering of two coins to have been far more generous than were the visually lavish donations from the wealthy men. Our next text comes from Matthew 6, 1 to 4. And Jesus there illustrates how religious piety differs from truly devout ethical behavior. And in just in summary, he says, give secretly. Do not talk about your giving. Do not tell everybody about your giving. And then God will reward you secretly. Matthew 5 is a verse I wish had not been written. Matthew 5 is powerful and about as explicit as one can get. At the end of the verse, it talks about giving money through lending. And it's understood that, you know, when you make this loan, it's never going to come back to you. You're never going to get it back. This would be lending money to our social equals. In a parallel passage, it says neighbors or family. If you think it's easy to do that, well, I can tell you it's not. In the first part of the verse, however, Jesus asks that each and every time I see a beggar, I should give that person something. This is a tricky passage to analyze. It's tricky because I don't like it. Professional beggars were a despised class in biblical times, and street people are a despised class today. And now, I'm going to be briefly like the Pharisee, praying aloud. Lord, I am now trying to give to the beggars I see in Vancouver. Folks, this represents a change of heart. Let me tell you. I cannot begin to report how many excuses flow through my mind, or how often serious resentment comes up as I want to hold on to all of my tunies, or societal questions bubble up in my mind. Surely this is not the way to solve this guy's problem. Giving to street people does not come naturally to me, because I was never taught to do it. I don't remember any ministers ever using this verse as a focal point of a sermon. I never saw Dad give to a beggar. But come to think of it, that's because there were no beggars in Wadsworth, Ohio. What we had were hobos, people who were on the move, going from town to town, looking for work, hungry, misfits, mental problems of all sorts. And they would come to our back door, probably because Dad was listed as a minister in the phone book. And they would ask for something to eat. And each and every time, Mom always fed them a decent meal. She would not let them in the house because she was alone, but she would feed them. But now when I walk downtown, something I try to avoid, I see multiple street people begging, and true, when I go to Europe too. And when I see them, I'm now using this as a signal to remind myself that, hey, I am fortunate. For I was never abused as a child, sexually or psychologically. I've always been able to find good employment that gave me more money than I really needed. My family always supported me, even when I disobeyed. And my circles of friends, none of my friends have ever left me. So I think it's time I stop judging others who have not had my safe kind of life. And so I'm trying to stop comparing my upright life with the impoverished life of those who find their best option is to be on the street. I'm trying to stop being self-righteous like that Pharisee. It's hard. But I'm also trying to give to the poor one-on-one, just a token, as Jesus demanded. Next is Luke 12, which is given to a group of people. He calls them a little flock. This seems to have apocalyptic overtones, almost assuming that, look, if God is going to give us the kingdom, well, why worry about holding on to our present properties and wealth? And so he tells everybody who is listening, sell your possessions and give alms. Share it, because soon it will be replaced with something even better. Now let's look at a parallel instruction in Matthew 19:21. Jesus repeats what he had said earlier to a group of people in Luke 12. Therefore, I think it's one of the themes of Jesus. I assume that every time something is recorded that Jesus said, even if it's recorded only once, it was probably said a number of times, and therefore people remembered it and remembered to tell the people who were collecting the stories. Here, Jesus gives his admonition to a very rich young man. Sell your possessions and give the money to the poor. Obviously, this is yet another of the extreme statements of Jesus, and it was obviously not made to just one person, because he repeated it elsewhere. I have wondered, Jesus was unemployed, far as I know. Jesus had no fields, no flocks, no vineyards. What did he have to lose by saying, go sell your stuff? He didn't have anything to sell. Was that what made it possible for Jesus to be radical? I don't know. Is selling what you have and giving it to the poor even a serious option for any sane person? The Christians in Acts thought so in Jerusalem, and they did just that, briefly. I think they found out it was not sustainable, but they tried it. St. Francis of Assisi, we sang one of his songs this morning. St. Francis of Assisi gave away what he owned, and is still remembered for it today. I think we remember because it was so unusual that a rich person would do that. Very few people have taken Jesus's admonition literally. I clearly have not, and the way it looks, I have no intention. Our final text, Matthew 25, is one of the most clear. We heard it read, and it's a much longer text. We just had one of the sequences. Yet it's one of the most puzzling teachings of Jesus. It's given toward the end of his teaching, preaching ministry. Soon after this, he's going to be going into the Last Supper, the trial, death, and resurrection. What I had not noticed before in this story is that Jesus is saying that we will be judged totally according to the ways we use our money when seeing poor people on the street one-on-one. Each of these examples involves giving money or sustenance, which costs either time or money, to individuals one-on-one, not through alms given to an institution like the temple. You gave me food. That would be money, or sharing what little food you had. You gave me something to drink today. That would involve a tiny bit of money. You took me in as a visitor, so you gave shelter, which would involve a great inconvenience or money for an inn, like the Good Samaritan. You gave me clothing. Well, clothing was not yet made in China and Vietnam for export. You gave me health care. That would be money. You visited me in prison. Well, you didn't just visit, but the prisoners were not fed by the prison. You had to take food and blankets to the prisoners so they would continue living. So Jesus' story is suggesting that we can tithe to our heart's content and give alms to the temple, but ultimately, giving directly to the poor is what counts. I would think that a personal faith in God is also important. But what Jesus emphasizes is giving one-on-one to the poor. Is this story for real? The author certainly spent enough time in the dialogue in the full telling of the story. He goes through the financial sequence four times. When did we see you? Well, when you did it to the least of one of these. So some reflections on these texts. First on tithing. Jesus never tithed. None of Jesus' disciples ever tithed. They were not required to tithe by the law because they did not own flocks, herds, fields, vineyards, orchards. You tithe from things to which God gave life. But we assume that Jesus gave alms to the poor, and we know that Jesus often stopped and talked with street people. Jesus seems to assume that people who are required to tithe by the law should continue doing so, so that sacrifices can still be burned at the temple. But neither Jesus nor Judaism ever redefined the tithe to include income. To this day, the Jews do not tithe income. The only two times Jesus mentions tithing, he does so in order to criticize those who think that the 10% of their massive wealth is really enough, or who look at their wealth as putting them above others in God's eyes as well as in their own eyes. And finally, Jesus never received help from tithe. Tithe money never went to Jesus or his disciples. That would have been against the law, because Jesus was from the tribe of Judah, not the tribe of Levi. So, reflections on what Jesus had to say about giving alms and handouts. Jesus consistently asks us to be generous. Jesus never tells people to give offerings to the temple for its repair fund. Jesus never asks his followers to give money to plant more churches or more synagogues or to support priests. No, Jesus, when he talks about giving, only talks about giving to the poor. Tithes and alms never went toward building programs. None of the three temples were ever built, or their operating budgets ever run from tithes or alms. They had temple taxes for that. Jesus explicitly taught helping people one-on-one. The Good Samaritan did not hurry off saying, "By golly, I'm going to devote a month's salary to the Salvation Army or MCC or the temple so that they can look after that poor guy on the road." The Good Samaritan saw, he stopped, he helped. Now, I think everybody in this room gives generously to relief, to help the needy, to help the street people in various countries. Many in this room give generously to organizations like the Salvation Army, Union Gospel Mission, one food bank after another, homeless shelters, all kinds of relief charities. And this is good. This is good because these organizations know how to help people professionally. The food banks know how to get a lot of food at a good price in bulk. People who are professional and work with street people know how to talk to them and how to help them more than anything I give them ever will. But, that sort of what I will call anonymous giving that Janice and I do has actually encouraged me to be self-righteous when it comes to a one-on-one basis. When I see a street person in Vancouver, I cannot tell you how many times I have thought, "Hey, I gave already. I give to all of these organizations. Go to the food bank. That's where I have food for you. Go to the shelter that our church is helping sponsor or whatever. I owe you nothing. I owe that guy not a thing. I'm not even going to look at you. I'm going to look away. I'm going to pretend that you don't exist. I may as well be standing beside the rich Pharisee praying aloud in the temple, 'God, I thank thee that I am not like that street person there. I give my tithes. I give to charity. By golly, I worked for my money.'" But Jesus says very clearly, "Evan, you are absolutely mistaken. If you see someone in need, give." So this brings me to the point that has troubled me ever since I wrote this darn thing 6 weeks ago. I call myself a Christian, yet I am really reluctant to follow Christ's explicit teaching. If I feel that something Jesus said is absolutely outrageous, hey, I'm no fool. I find ways to write it off. Jesus taught us all to sell at least some of our possessions and give to the poor. He said this to people generally and to the rich young ruler specifically. "Even though I am relatively rich, I have not done this. You see, when it comes to the Bible, I pick and choose. Sometimes we argue that Jesus surely meant these radical teachings on money to be taken as ideals, as suggestions, symbolically, metaphorically, but not literally. Surely I don't have to give to the beggars. Oh, even though Jesus repeatedly taught this. You see, I pick and choose. Ultimately, Jesus was assassinated because of money. Remember how the law said that if you are tithing from your farm things, your animals and your crops, and you live far from Jerusalem, and you have to take them to Jerusalem, maybe 100 kilometers or so, you can sell them locally, get money, and then take that money to the temple where you buy unblemished animals for sacrifice in the temple itself. We think that the angels who sang to the shepherds were probably singing to temple shepherds as they were watching animals to be slaughtered eventually. Well, this selling of cows and whatnot in the temple turned out to be a real cash cow, as it were. As it was for money changers, you could only pay your temple tithe with temple coin, and so the money changers made huge profits changing the money. When Jesus rode in triumph into Jerusalem, he went into the court of the Gentiles, where the animals were being sold and where the money was being exchanged. He made a whip from rope, and he literally swung it around, forcing the men to leave. A nice pacifist gesture. And overturned the money tables, which is going to make accounting really trouble, and upset the temple authorities so much that they decided, we better get rid of this guy. And that was the turning point. And from then on, they tried to find a way to kill him. Jesus died, in part, because of his views on money and his actions on money. Jesus once said, I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. What do we believe? Do we consider the needs one-on-one? Or do we count the seeds one by one? What will I be able to say when Jesus asks me that list of questions in Matthew 25?